Okay, the next argued case is number 19-1753, Sanchez against Health and Human Services. Ms. Roberts-Moore.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it please the Court. We're here today to decide whether or not the special master was arbitrary and capricious, as well as committed legal error. Foundationally, first, I would like to remind the Court that the special master found prong one of Alfin, that we had met our burden in terms of providing a medically plausible theory. And in doing so, he concluded that the vaccine could cause the fever and the inconsolable crying. And the basis of that was primarily, in addition, of course, to we had considerable expert testimony, but I think he mostly relied upon the vaccine pamphlet, which clearly showed that the vaccine could cause fever and inconsolable crying.
Let me ask you a question, Kelsey. So when you have that, you arrive at that point in the road in these vaccine cases, and the special master finds that something could have happened. So it's in the balance. When the special master uses those words, I imagine he's saying it could have or could not have, or it's possible or it's not possible. When it's in that balance, and given that this is a remedial statute, should the special master decision fall in favor of the victim?
Well, given the remedial, and I know there's some debate of whether or not the remedial provisions should trump sovereign immunity, I would contend and submit that the petitioner should get the benefit of the doubt, especially in light of this being a remedial program. In addition to the finding of it could cause, he went further in his decision to state that there was no meaningful debate that the vaccine did cause the fever. And when I read that in a decision...
The fever on February 5th.
Correct.
Right, but not necessarily the fever on February 16th.
That's correct. But the fever on the 5th is what started the whole domino, the whole cascade of events.
Well, that started the question in the case.
Well, that's what petitioner contends. Absolutely,
all right.
Your Honor.
I understand. And
if I might go back to the Pellet case, which this court also decided, that was the position of the petitioner as well, that when you start with, you know, fever and these other encephalopathic symptoms, that is the initial phase that starts the ball rolling, and then the other manifestations can occur weeks to months later. And our experts testified very consistently to the expert testimony in Palak. The legal error that we believe has occurred in this case then is both in prong 2 and 3, and I'd like to first draw our attention to prong 3, the timing, which I think was a considerable amount of time, was put forth in the decision on trying to decide timing in this case. And we would submit that had the special master followed this court's decision in Markovich, then the first onset symptom, and there's only one onset symptom pursuant to Markovich, the first onset symptom was the fever, and arguably the inconsolable crying, but absolutely the first onset symptom was fever, and we would also contend the inconsolable crying. What happened, however, instead of following Markovich, we leapt over first onset sign, which, and I'll backtrack a little bit, I believe the language is that these first onset signs need to be objectively recognizable in the medical community, and I would submit they are. It's in the vaccine pamphlet. So it has to be objectively recognizable.
Well, here's where I have a problem with the way you're laying this out. I mean, there's no doubt that I don't think anybody would dispute that the child had a reaction to the vaccine.
Correct.
And it was a classic reaction to a vaccine, a fever, a hot spot, and so forth. So that there's no doubt about that. The question, though, is, was there something that happened at that moment that was neurologically significant other than the normal reaction that a sensitive child would have to a vaccine? Or was there something later that happened that constituted the onset? I thought that the principal theory here really was that it was the cold, or whether it was a cold or not, the events of the February 16th that reflected the onset of the neurological condition, the vaccine having simply prepared the child for vulnerability to what later happened on the 16th. Isn't that a fair characterization of your position?
If I might add to it, that when you're dealing with a child that has Lay's disease, then when you are subjected to the vaccine and then the fever and inconsolable crying, which our experts did characterize as a neurodegenerative event, then the oxidative stress on that child, it's already, the ball is already rolling on that. And then you don't need to have, at least according to Markovitch, the first manifestation, which is the neurological manifestation. I would also submit that we do have a first neurological manifestation, and that was the new finding by the special master of arm contortions.
But that was on the 16th.
That's correct.
That wasn't the
that didn't start the ball.
As I understand it, inconsolable crying is consistent with a reaction to the vaccine that is not neurological, or at least doesn't have neurological implications. Isn't that right? Isn't that in the packet insert?
It is in the package insert.
So that the inconsolable crying on at the time of the administration of the vaccine doesn't really tell us much about whether that is a neurological, the beginning of neurological degeneration, right?
I believe that's correct.
Okay.
But it certainly starts as a first onset symptom pursuant to Markovitch, just like blinking as a generalized reaction. You kind of look retrospectively as to what's happening, and that started the ball rolling. And it's recognizable by the medical community. It's recognized by our experts, definitely. And even if that wasn't enough, then the 10 days later, you do have the arm contortions, and I realize that the special master did characterize the arm contortions as consistent with a cold. But I'd be very interested in seeing the evidence of that. I haven't seen it thus far. It's not been in the briefs. Definitely our experts said arm contortions, you know, unlike maybe startling awake, you know, because you have a stuffy nose. But definitely these arm contortions, which are outlined in Dr. Haas's medical records, there is no evidence that that is consistent with a cold. Dr. Steinman said it wasn't consistent. Dr. Niyazov said it wasn't consistent. And respondents, expert Dr. Raymond, never specifically addressed the arm contortions as being consistent with a cold. I just couldn't find it. So,
of course, at that point, this is what's awkward about the record, is at that point, the special master had found there hadn't been any arm contortions in his initial factual findings, so there's no reason for anybody to address arm contortions.
I agree. We did, though, because it was a fact in the case. And, of course, it is awkward, but that's part of the thing, is there is no evidence that it's consistent with a cold. We contend it's an impermissible diagnosis by a special master. And it is...
At this point, were you able, did you have the opportunity to get your own expert or to get an evidence on this question, whether the arm contortion was consistent with the cold or not?
Yes. Dr. Steinman specifically testified that it was not consistent with a cold. So those arm contortions did commence 10 days afterwards. And what we believe happened in the decision is that then the special master kind of leapt from first onset symptoms and went straight to manifestations, which again I think is legal error. But the manifestations that he relied upon was loss of skills, regression. Well, that's not the only manifestation of Leigh's disease. And so there's an article by Sofu that was outlined in Dr. Steinman's expert report at Appendix 454 through 55 in Table 1 that specifically outlines manifestations of Leigh's disease, which includes abnormal motor findings and dystonia. And we would contend that these arm contortions, as Dr. Steinman testified, are in fact dystonic posturing. Dr. Haas, in his medical records, also, after he describes the arm contortion posturing, also concludes in his medical records dystonia. So even if the fever and inconsolable crying were not the first onset symptom that we look at for prong three, we have the abnormal arm contortions. And there is no evidence that it's consistent with a cold. And even if we don't buy that, and I want to reserve my rebuttal time, I know that this court has looked very heavily at the literature that we provided that was also provided in Palak, and that was the Schaffner, the Edmonds, and the Poling case. But we also provided literature by Dr. Navio, who was a co-author of Edmonds and a peer reviewer of Schaffner. So that literature kind of gave us additional evolution of how we get manifestations weeks to months. It doesn't have to be within 7 days. It doesn't have to be within 19 days. It can go on weeks to months. And I'd like to reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Okay. Let's hear from the governor. Ms. Perlman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The child in this case has a severe genetic condition caused by two mutations in his nuclear DNA, and there's no question that but for these mutations, he would not have developed his Leigh syndrome.
I'm glad you mentioned, this is the problem, isn't it? A little too much knowledge. At the time the Vaccine Act was enacted, this sort of sequence of events, an immediate reaction from the infant to the vaccine, followed in quite a short time with a very serious, in this case neurological, often fatal response, was exactly the kind of situation that the Vaccine Act was intended to respond to, because the public was refraining some people from participating in vaccinations because of fear. Now we have a little too much knowledge. Now we know that this infant had, the record says, two genetic aberrations whereby this neurological result was likely or at least explainable. Why should that diminish the role of the Vaccine Act for compensation? Until we get to the point where every infant has its genome analyzed to determine if it has such a propensity, apparently less than 1% may, then we'll have the same kind of sequence of results. But now we say, you were born that way, so the Vaccine Act doesn't apply to you. This is what troubles me about these cases. This isn't the first that we've seen with this kind of event.
Yes, Your Honor. The Vaccine Act, as you know, was created to compensate individuals who were injured by vaccines. And in an off-table case like this, petitioners need to show by preponderant evidence that the vaccine was a but-for cause of the particular reaction.
Or aggravated.
Correct.
Right. But I mean, the argument that Dr. Steinman made in addressing this precise point is that, sure, he had a problem that was likely at some point to manifest itself. But as I understand his testimony, the gist of it is that the later that it manifested itself, the better off he would have been. And therefore, he had a wide variety of possible outcomes, one of which was that it never would have manifested itself, although that was unlikely. And why isn't that enough to say that the vaccine, by causing the reaction that it caused, if it did, made a difference that's important for purposes of Vaccine Act compensation?
Okay. You brought up a few issues that I would like to address.
Yeah, but it's all wrapped into one.
Yes. Well, your initial statement about the fact that Dr. Steinman testified that the child may have eventually wound up or may not have wound up with Lay's disease, the special master specifically found the opposite in the decision. And this part was not challenged by petitioners in this case. He found that the clinical course is entirely consistent with what is known about the child's specific genetic mutations in individuals.
This is on page 41 of his report, right at the end of the report.
It's 12 pages.
And that's the part in which he says, I'm not deciding this case on this basis. So I don't know that you seem to be suggesting that maybe we should decide this case on that ground.
No, Your Honor. That's okay. Not what I'm suggesting.
Right. So if we take only the question of whether there was some result, incremental result, as a result of the vaccine, why isn't that enough to justify some form of compensation?
Because there is no factual evidence in the record, and the special master found this, of any type of neurodegeneration within temporal proximity of the vaccine. Ms. Rockmore suggested that fever and inconsolable crying are evidence of neurodegeneration.
How about the arm contortions?
The arm contortions.
On February 16th.
Correct. Actually, Dr. Raymond did speak to the arm contortions in one of his expert reports, and it is at appendix page 816. And he was talking about the contortion of the arms and says, twisting arms behind the back is not a recognized movement during seizures. And it was seizures that Dr. Steinman was referring to. So if there is no evidence of any neurodegeneration within 3 months of the vaccines, there is no factual basis that the vaccines somehow contributed to the child's course.
But the argument that I understand was made with respect to the contortions was predicated on the fact that the special master initially said that there were no contortions and then later said that there were. But the argument seemed to be that the contortions were consistent with a cold. What evidence is there that arm contortions are consistent with a cold?
Well, Judge Campbell Smith, in her opinion, did cite some language from our pediatric immunologist,
Doctor. Point to me in the record because this is important, and I looked hard to find evidence supporting the theory that there was a relationship between the arm contortions and a cold. And the only things I could find were two statements that didn't really seem to me to go that far, made by Dr. Raymond and I guess Dr. McGady. Yeah, can you discuss those two pieces of evidence? Because that's, to me, this is a really critical point in the case.
Well, as you acknowledged earlier, this information was not part of the fact pattern that the experts were asked to speak to. So obviously there is some disadvantage in the record does not fully go into it.
Right. But in the hearing, this issue was raised. And the question was presented to Drs. Raymond and McGady about what evidence there is that arm contortions are indicative of a cold.
I believe that, and Dr. Raymond in particular, addressed the issue more of were these arm contortions or any of the symptoms that were exhibited from the day of the vaccine through 12 days after indicative of neurodegeneration? That is the question at issue, is when did the Lays syndrome first manifest itself?
But he wasn't talking about the arm contortions, as I understand his testimony. He would have the portion of his testimony in which he addresses the whole consistent with a cold.
If you happen to have the appendix number.
Well, let's see. I have it here somewhere. Chapter 731, I think, is one. This is of the transcript, actually, not the appendix. 731.
Seven thirty-one of the transcript number on the upper right-hand corner?
I'm working from the transcript. You're working from the appendix.
Is it appendix 743 at page 731?
Yes.
Yes, okay. This is Dr. McGady who is speaking.
Right.
And he was asked, do you think the inconsolable crying that Tristan had shortly after the February 5th vaccines were caused by the vaccine? He said, I think it very well may have been. And he goes on to describe that these are normal reactions that you have to vaccines.
Inconsolable crying, but he doesn't say the same about arm contortions.
Well, this particular discussion dealt with the day of the vaccines, where arm contortions are not a question.
Okay, well, let me get cut to the chase here.
Sure.
Is there any evidence? I mean, Ms. Rockamore says there's no evidence in the record. None. Zero. That there is a relationship between arm contortions and a cold. Do you have anything to point to that says that's not so?
I do not, but I would say that there is no evidence in the record to show that it's part of any type of neurodegenerative process. And that is what petitioners had the burden to show, is to show that this symptom is related to
That was the gist of Dr. Steinman's testimony as to the events of February 16th.
But as Dr. Raymond pointed out, you would not have, first of all, arm contortions are not evidence of a seizure or any type of neurologic condition. And that's what Dr. Raymond, the site I gave you earlier, what he testified to. But Dr. Raymond also stressed that in neurology, you don't have a symbol of a symptom, something happened, and then have nothing happen for several months. It just doesn't happen. That's inconsistent, and I can get you a cite for that.
Well, of course, the petitioner's theory is that things were happening, it's just that they weren't manifesting themselves, because we're talking about a very young child, and developmental regression is hard to spot.
Correct, but there is evidence of neurodegeneration. At any age, you can see it. And Ms. Rockmore cited the Navio article. This is appendix at 398 for some of the symptoms you would see in this regression. And it would include that the child became difficult to fully awaken. He will stop walking, talking, stiffen or lose muscle tone, have a seizure or a stroke-like episode. None of those happened. And more importantly, Dr. Navio went on to say, it involves an energy failure that can lead to a series of neurodegenerative events and even death over the next 2 to 3 months. There is no series here. There is simply the absence of evidence of anything except for this child had a series of upper respiratory infections, which happened to be a known precipitant of the Lays syndrome, which he was diagnosed.
What do you say about the challenge-rechallenge argument? The point being that there was evidence that between August 7th and October, I guess it was 7th, when he was seen for the first time after the second vaccinations, there was evidence of further deterioration in his condition.
There was...
That appears to be true.
Well, there was... I'm sorry.
Would you agree that the evidence... He was worse off on October 7th than he was on August 7th.
Yes, that is part of the typical decline of Lays syndrome. But challenge, rechallenge, by definition, requires the same adverse event happening after the first vaccine and after the second vaccine. Dr. Simon said he had seizures after the first vaccine, and then he had seizures again. The record from October 7th, which was 6 weeks after the vaccine, and this is appendix at 124, said that they denied any new complaints, denied seizures, no weakness, no tics. There's no evidence that anything other than the normal course of Leigh syndrome, which is a progressive, devastating neurologic disease, the child was just continuing on the course that he would have gone on. Nothing overt happened. And this is important for the Pollock analogy that petitioners are trying to make the fact situation the same thing as Pollock. And it simply is not. In Pollock, there was a very clear neurodegenerative event 23 days after the vaccine. And that is something that this court repeated time and again in the decision. The child had a rapid and devastating, a precipitous and well-documented, a pronounced neurologic decline after the vaccine, and he never got better. That is completely different than the situation we have here, where he had some symptoms of something. The special master believed it was a cold. We state there's nothing to say it wasn't a cold, and there's certainly nothing to show that it's neurodegenerative.
No. Go ahead.
And then nothing happened. It's completely different than the fact situation in Pollock.
What about the fact that the special master didn't address the challenge-rechallenge issue? And so we really don't know, we don't have findings from the special master, or at least conclusions from the special master, as to that theory of degeneration coming from the second.
There's no factual basis for the theory. The special master, in his factual finding, said that none of the things that petitioners rely on for their challenge-rechallenge theory, they didn't happen. So there's no reason for him to discuss something that there's
worse, and that's indisputable, right?
But that's not what challenge-rechallenge is.
But it's part of proof of challenge-rechallenge is that suddenly, after either some period of stability or the child suddenly gets worse.
Well, the definition of rechallenge, and this is from the Institute of Medicine, yeah. Rechallenge is an adverse event that occurred after more than one administration of a particular vaccine in the same individual. Each challenge in a patient, however, must meet the same attributes of reasonable latency, documentation of vaccine receipt, and clinician diagnosis of the health outcome. That does not describe what happened with the facts that we have before us in this case. The child, and in Locaine, this court spoke to it, what is the normal progression of the disease? There's nothing in the child's medical records at all to show that he did anything other than what was expected of a child with Leigh's disease. The only thing that makes him different is that he is still alive, which is terrific, but he is actually doing better than almost all the other children who unfortunately don't make it.
Do you think if we were to disagree with you with respect to the findings regarding the cause of his onset of conditions, neurodegenerative conditions that ultimately constitute Leigh's disease, do you think we would need to remand for the special master to make a ruling on the issue that he discussed at the very end of his decision regarding the point you began with, which was he would have been in the same situation even had he never had a vaccination?
I don't think so. I think he explained his position, and again, petitioners...
Well, but he declined to rule on that, so... My question to you is, if you lose on, I'll put it bluntly, if you lose on everything else, do you think you're entitled to a remand on that issue?
If that is the route the court wants to take, then perhaps.
I'm actually looking to you to ask if that is legally, do you think you are legally entitled to a remand on that issue?
Yes, I do. I just would like to say one more thing, Your Honor, is that your disagreement with the special master's fact-finding is not enough under this court's precedent to overturn the decision. You have to find that his decision is arbitrary and capricious, and the record, and it's a significant one, shows that the contemporaneous medical records, the child's treating physicians, the reports of the parents, and two experts in pediatrics that we had that petitioners did not put forth all said that there is no evidence of neurodegeneration. So we would respectfully ask that you affirm the special master's findings.
Thank you, Ms. Perlman.
Thank you.
Ms. Rockmore?
A lot to address. On the remand issue, because the special master made it clear that it wasn't part of his ruling, we considered it dicta. I don't know why it was memorialized. It was.
He said for the record.
It's for the record.
Which I assume means that in the event that something goes awry, that this is his position on that issue.
And then if it gets remanded, then I would say it's similar to other cases that have been remanded to him. We'll be right back here for sure. Because we're not, you know, obviously we didn't address the issue.
On what point can we just straight out reverse that?
I think on legal error, on failure to follow Markovich, legal error on deciding challenge, re-challenge. Just in and of itself right there, I think kind of lumping prong two and three together and not addressing all the other prong two events, like the treating doctors that were implicating the vaccine, that the vaccine acted consistent with what we would see in a child. Of course, the re-challenge and challenge is a big one for prong two as well.
Okay, I meant to ask your opponents while they were here, but it escaped me. But it seems to me that the parents also presented evidence that of arm contortions shortly after the vaccines were taken. Is that correct?
They did.
Okay.
But the original findings of fact found that the arm contortions happened way later. And then later on, after the entitlement hearing with the experts, he changed his mind, apparently based on what he perceived that he saw in the medical records, and found that they did occur 10 days later. On challenge, re-challenge, I would like to also make sure the court realizes that the experts relied on special master's fact findings. So that's why we included the charts in the appendix of what they relied upon while they were testifying to challenge, re-challenge during the entitlement hearing. So they were based on his facts that he presented, not the parent testimony, and not just little blurbs of medical records, which, you know, these injuries, it's not like a car accident where...
Let me ask you, with respect to the challenge, re-challenge, why is it not possible to read, in light of the special master's findings and the record, to read the events from, say, June on through to November as being essentially a steady state of deterioration during that period with respect to the vaccination having no particular impact?
My recollection of the testimony and looking at the charts is that the child was kind of stabilizing before the second set of vaccines, and then he got another second hit. That's what happens.
I looked for that, and I didn't find anything to suggest that. In fact, the mother's testimony was that I started noticing 2 or 3 months ago that he was regressing. And I didn't see anything to suggest that, but he stabilized until August 8th, and then kapowee, he hit the wall. I didn't see anything to that effect. Is there anything I missed?
As to the mother's testimony,
well, as to any
our
evidence,
hands were
any
kind
evidence.
Of tied by the fact rulings, and if I can point to Appendix 522 and mm-hmm. 523, which are the charts that the experts relied upon, at least petitioner's experts, where you have the initial hit, you have the immediate fever and inconsolable crying, the ebbing and the flowing, the fever, arm contortions, losing skills, and then you have kind of the rigid, limp contortions that were happening. But after the second set, we add even more symptoms because it...
Right, but the question
according
is,
to
is
the
anything
expert
indicates
testimony,
that he was doing fine between June and August? I didn't see that. I thought he was losing skills.
Oh, June, before the second set
right.
of... He was, as I believe Dr. Niyazov testified, that he kind of plateaued.
I'm looking at Appendix 251, and it's part of that timetable that takes you all the way to the second set. I don't see anything in there indicating an improvement. It's just, in fact, it ends with the Jennifer's baby shower, and they remembered on that day the symptoms that that the child was exhibiting. Okay.
And I do recall, you know, Dr. Niyazov's testimony where he thought that based on what was going on and based on even the fact rulings that he had plateaued. And then when he got the second set of vaccines, he got... similar symptoms, and even worse.
Now, he did not have a reaction to this, I mean, a physical reaction to the second vaccine, if I recall correctly. Is that right? In other words, he didn't have a fever and didn't have a hot spot and so forth.
I do not recall any evidence to that effect.
I think that was the gist of the evidence. Okay.
If there's any further questions...
Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes our arguments.